Gracious Words. Gracious Words is taken from the weekly women's Bible study taught by Cheryl Broderson at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.
We behold your glory, God, in the face of Christ. It shows us who you are.
Today, we'll look at what true worship really is. It's more than words or songs, it's a lifelong pursuit of Jesus. Part one of Cheryl's message titled Wise Men Worship.
So there's this new book that's just been written. It's just come out about Elizabeth Elliot, and it's by Ellen Vaughn. And I don't know how many of you know who Elizabeth Elliot was or her story. She was a year older than my mom. She was a missionary to Ecuador, and her story was inspirational to my father. In 1956, on January 8th, the whole world was rocked by the news that her husband, Jim Elliot, along with four other missionaries, was killed trying to take the gospel to this tribe, the Aka Indians, in Ecuador. And for days, for weeks, it just kept appearing in the newspaper. And they even went to the journals of Jim Elliot, and there was a quote that inspired my dad, and it says, "No man has lost what he cannot keep." And the idea of giving your life away, you can't keep it, but just giving it to God. Elizabeth would later write about the dedication of these men to Jesus and their endeavor and passion in the book Through Gates of Splendor. She went on to go to that very tribe that had killed her husband and those four friends and take the gospel along with a woman named Rachel Saint. But the thing about Elizabeth is she moved there with her little daughter, her four-year-old daughter, Valerie, and lived among that tribe. Later, she would write a book, The Tribesmen, My Kinsmen, or My Kinsmen, Tribesmen, something along those lines. She wrote over 40 books, so it's hard to remember all of them. But she was just this amazing woman who not only lost her first husband, but when she finally moved back to the States and she remarried, she married a man named Addison. 3 years after she married him, he succumbed to brain cancer and he died. So, you know, her life seems to have all these tragedies in it. And yet she was so stalwart, so dedicated to Jesus Christ. And she even had a radio program called Gateway to Joy. Gateway to Joy. She could be really, really intimidating. I know. She spoke at my college when I was at Westmont College. We were like, by the time she was finished with us, we felt like we were this big. You know, like, what are you doing for your lives for Jesus? And we're like, you know, you shouldn't just be learning. You should be learning to go serve Jesus. And I mean, it wasn't nice. It was an impassioned plea that kind of hurt, especially for a self-centered girl who was at college just trying to improve herself. It was like, what? So years later, my mom said, Cheryl, I lived in Vista by this time. She said, Elizabeth Elliot is coming to speak at Calvary to the women's ministry. I said, oh my goodness, are you so excited? She said, yes, and terrified. I said, I don't blame you. And she said, bring a group of women up from Vista. I said, we will. So there were probably about 20 of us that jumped in vans and caravaned all the way up to hear Elizabeth Elliot speak. So before she spoke, maybe some of you were there and you remember, the singers got up and they were singing a song I used to really like. It was one of Terry Clark's songs, and it says, "I'll stand and worship you the whole night through." And we're all like singing it, "I'll stand and worship you the whole night through." You know, we're doing it with full gusto. And my mom looks over and Elizabeth's like, my mom thought, uh-oh. So then Elizabeth gets up and she says, "Really? Really? You're going to stand all night long and worship the Lord?" She said, "How many of you have prayed all night?" You're like, "What have you sacrificed for Jesus? And what do you think worship is? It's not a one-off. It's not a one-night ordeal. It's not just singing or a feeling. Some of you are so into your feelings, way too into your feelings. It's not about a feeling. It's a lifelong pursuit. It's a constant submission to the Lordship of Jesus Christ." And we went, "Okay, sorry." And she went on to talk a little bit more about what worship was not and what worship is. And I do think that in our current culture, we have reduced worship. We've made it about how I'm moved by the songs. So we'll come to church, and during the singing, we might say, "I wasn't really moved. I don't know if that was really worship. Because, you know, I was thinking about Hawaii most of the time." Because we've made worship just singing, or about the feelings we have during singing. And worship has nothing to do with your feelings. Worship is so much bigger, so much greater. It doesn't have to do with the song selection or whether I like the song they're singing or not. When we praise the Lord and we call it worship, what we're doing is actually sharing the fruit of our lips. Paul calls it, or the author of Hebrews calls it, the fruit of our lips. It's the outgrowth of what the Lord is doing. It's a time of expressing what's actually in our hearts. I think that these wise men that we're studying, they got worship. They got it. They got it in a way that we need to get worship. And their example, as you know, you've studied it this week, is given to us in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. We know very little about these men, except that they were wise, wise men, or the Greek word is magos, and it has a variety of definitions. It means magicians, or it can mean astronomers, scientists, intellectuals, astrologers, priests, physicians. It can mean any one of those. Or it can mean all of those. They were magos. They were wise men. We know that they came from the east, somewhere east of Israel. Again, the range of where they could have come from is immense. Some people say as far as China. Others say it was Persia. We don't know. But we do know this, that they studied the stars and the movements of the stars, that they were familiar with ancient prophecies, and whether that was the biblical prophecy of Balaam, who was also a Gentile. And we know of that prophecy because it's in the book of Numbers 24, verse 17, that says a star will come out of Judah. That maybe that was the prophecy, or maybe there were other prophecies, ones that have been lost to us, that they were studying, that they knew, that told them that the star that they were seeing was unique, was significant and was testifying that the King of the Jews had come to the world. The account of these wise men is very short. There's 12 verses. We know that they followed a star from the east, and when they lost sight of the star, they stopped in Jerusalem to ask questions. Don't you love men that will ask directions? Talk about unique. These men were unique. They were wise. And they made it known to anyone who was there in Jerusalem that they had come to find and to worship the one who is born King of the Jews. This is happening right now, and we want to be a part of it. We know that upon their arrival, that their questions and their quest bothered those in Jerusalem. It wasn't well received. It bothered King Herod. It bothered the religious leaders. It bothered the general populace of Jerusalem. They were bothered by it. We know that they had an audience with King Herod. We know that because of these men, and perhaps because of their prominence or the nation that they represented, Herod made inquiries for them about the birthplace of the King of the Jews according to the Bible. These men did not know the prophecy of Micah. They didn't know where the King of the Jews was born, only that the star meant he was, and the star would lead them to where the King of the Jews was. The chief priest identified Bethlehem as the birthplace according to the prophecy found in Micah 5:2. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. We know that Herod sent them in the direction of Bethlehem with instructions to return to his court and identify the one they found. We know that these wise men left Herod's court and were able once again to see the star. And when they saw that star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. Don't you love that? It's not just joy, because that's pretty good, joy. And it's not just great joy, because great joy is like great. That word great in, you're going to recognize it in the Greek, is mega. It wasn't just mega joy. It was exceedingly mega joy. It went beyond what you could describe. It exceeded joy. I'm thinking, when did I have exceedingly great joy? When did I have that? And I thought, at the birth of my daughter, at the birth of my son, at the birth of my other daughter, at the birth of my grandson. That was exceedingly great joy. Not at my wedding, I was terrified. Like I was thinking, this is for life. I'm looking at him, this is for life. In fact, Brian and I, we were like gonna write our own vows. We were gonna write our own vows to each other. And we're looking at the vows that already are to kind of get our cues for what we'll say. And we're thinking, you know, I vow to love you. And I looked at him, I said, do you know, I really love you and I really like you, but this is a tall order and I'm not sure I can carry it out. I mean, like, I'm kind of self-centered. I know myself. I've been kind of spoiled by my dad and mom. And I don't know, I'm really taking a chance on you. He goes, oh, good, because I feel the same thing about you. And I'm like, it's one thing to dish it out, but it's another thing to have to eat it back again. And so we decided to pray for each other. Like, let's pray that God will give us the strength to do this. Let's commit our lives to God, to love each other, to be committed to each other. Let's give it to God and let him hold us to these things. That's exactly what we did. Now, he prayed for himself and I prayed for him too. and a little bit for me. But what is exceeding great joy? They knew this star was going to take them to some place that they wanted to go. The star they followed stood directly over a little house in Bethlehem, not over a palace, but over a house. And the wise men entered this house. They saw the young child Jesus with his mother Mary. We know that they fell down before him, that they opened their treasuries to him, that they presented their gifts to him, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and then they left, warned by an angel, another way. End of story. Like, what were their names? We don't know. Where did they go? We don't know. What did they testify to others? We don't know. What did they look like? We don't know. Do you get the picture? We don't know. Were there three of them? We don't know. We know there were three gifts, but hey, they could have gone in together like we do with shower and wedding presents. We don't know. Yet this short account has so much to teach us about worship. Point one, worship is a lifelong pursuit. It's a pursuit. This was the apex of their lives, to pursue and find the one who was born King of the Jews. It involved discomfort. It involved going the distance. It involved risking precarious conditions. But they were in pursuit of the presence of the one born King of the Jews. Worship is the pursuit, the constant pursuit, that the pursuit of the presence of the Lord is the greatest aspect of my life. I pursue the presence of Jesus. You see, what sets Christianity apart from every world religion, or even from some forms that we know of that are so-called Christians? We have the presence of the Lord. We have a relationship with Jesus. As the hymn goes, I walk and I talk with him constantly. We have the privilege of his presence. Spurgeon, who was a pastor in the 1800s in England, very prolific writer, and an eloquent, deep minister of the gospel. It was said that he was crossing a busy street in London, and this is when there were carriages with horses. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the street, he just stopped. And later, when he finished crossing the street, somebody said, you know, Mr. Pastor Spurgeon, what was that? I saw you just stand in the middle of the street. You almost got hit. He said, I felt a cloud come between the presence of God and myself, and I couldn't continue until that cloud was lifted. That's a pursuit of the presence of God, a constant pursuit. Next is perseverance. It's ongoing. They were not about to stop when the direction became unclear and they couldn't see their way. They were going to continue to pursue. If following the star didn't work, then we will stop and we will ask questions. We will seek direction. But we will not stop following or seeking the presence of the Lord. They were committed and they would not be detoured or derailed. Thirdly, it's the proclamation of purpose. They let everyone know, our lives, our journey is because we want to worship the one who is born King of the Jews. A common person, I'm here to worship Jesus. A king, I'm here to worship the King of the Jews. The chief priests, we're here to worship the King of the Jews. They wanted everyone to know the purpose of why they had come, the purpose of their lives, their single focus, my life, my journey, all that I've done is about worshiping the one who is born King of the Jews. They made it known that they were there to find, pay homage, and revere the true King. They were there to worship the one who had been born biologically, intentionally, and divinely, the King of the Jews, the hope of the whole world. They were not intimidated by the disinterest or unrest of those they questioned who were living in Jerusalem. They were not intimidated by the decorum or superior knowledge of the religious leaders. And they were not intimidated by the dangerous, deceptive court of King Herod. They didn't care. They made it known. We're here. Whether you like it or not, whether you agree with us or not, we're here to worship the one who is born King of the Jews. Next, we see receptivity. They received the word of the Lord from priests. They listened to the directions to Bethlehem, and they rejoiced to see the star once more. They went to the very house the star stood over. You see, they were willing to receive whatever directives would lead them to Jesus. Whatever directives would lead them to Jesus, they were all in. You know, I know people that were like, well, I don't really like to hear people preach. You know, I kind of just like to read the Bible for myself. That's not worship. Worship is the whole, the whole. Worship is the willingness to hear it, to talk about it, and to read it for yourself. All of it. All of it. You know, we're such a picky culture, aren't we? Well, I don't really feel it. I don't really like it. My feelings, you know? We give our feelings way too much credibility. Now, I believe in feelings, but they're not to be given so much credibility. You know, feelings. Today, I feel like a boy. No. No. You know, my biology, my DNA, it's telling me something different. My feelings can lie to me. Oh, my goodness, can my feelings lie? My dad's feelings lied to him, let me tell you. Because I love to tell stories about when his feelings lied to him. Because you think he's perfect. Well, I remember this Sunday that my dad practically floated back to the office. I was sitting with my mom and my sister. My dad comes into his office. And he did something that was not like him. He went straight over to my mom and he gave her a great big kiss. And she's like, what's up? What's going on? He said, well, Kay, from the time I was 12 years old till I was 17, there was this one woman, I used to pray that she would be my wife. I had such strong feelings for her, and every camp I went to, I claimed the promise of God that she would be my wife. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord, Proverbs 18. And he said, when she married somebody else when I was 18, I was crestfallen. But today she came to the church and greeted me at the back door, and I was, thank God for unanswered prayers. Feelings can lie. Feelings can actually say, this is the Lord. You're like, you're lying. And you're just a feeling.
True worship begins with a heart that seeks after Jesus. Like the wise men, we are invited to come before him with humility, devotion, and surrender. And as we worship him, our lives are transformed by his presence. We hope you have been blessed by today's Bible study. For more information about the Gracious Words radio program and the teaching ministry of Cheryl Broderson, please visit our website at graciouswords.com. Coming up next time on the Gracious Words program, we'll continue our study titled Wise Men Worship. We do hope you'll make plans to join us. Again, for more information, please visit our website at graciouswords.com.
We will come before you, Lord, in wonder, We will fall on our knees and surrender. We surrender to you.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.